You're listening to the DolphinsTalk.com podcast network. Welcome to Dolphins Talk Weekly, your one-stop audio breakdown of all of this week's Miami Dolphins news. Now, here is your host, Kevin Durr.
Good morning, Dolphins. I hope you had a great weekend, and welcome to week two of Dolphins Training Camp and the Dolphins Talk Weekly podcast. I'm your host, Kevin Durr. Please give me a follow at KevinMD4 on Twitter, and you can follow the show by subscribing to us on iTunes, Spotify, Spreaker, wherever you get your podcasts. I do want to start off this show and apologize for not having an episode from last week. Just wanted to clear that up. So two Fridays ago, my daughter kind of had a small cough, a little bit of a head cold, and that was on Thursday and Friday. Gave that to my wife, who was sick Saturday and Sunday, and of course, I got that Sunday as well. I was going to record Sunday night because I had some things to do for school that I put off till Friday and Saturday that week. And of course, I went to go sit down and record, and I could barely talk. You would not have been able to understand a thing I said. I felt miserable for 2 days, and finally when my voice started to clear up, my throat started to feel better. In the Midwest, if you've ever been here or have family here or visited, you will know that the end of July, beginning of August, every year, like clockwork, is ragweed season. And I'm not allergic to very much, but I am allergic to ragweed, and I have just been miserably stuffy the past week. You can probably still hear it in my voice a little bit as I am still a little stuffed up, but feeling a lot better than I did last week. So in order to give a better quality podcast, I thought it would be best to just skip it for a week and record now when I'm feeling a little bit better. With that in mind, a bit of an administrative note, next week we have a little bit of a truncated timetable for my MBA class. So I probably will not have an episode coming out the weekend of, what is that, the 7th and the 8th. So I'll probably skip next week and then we'll pick it back up once we get into that week of the Bears joint practices and preseason games going on. So I do apologize in advance for that, but just a weird quirk in the schedule with my class as we get ready to hopefully finish the first class very strong. So going well so far. Thank you for your patience. Thank you for everybody who's reached out and asked about the podcast and why there wasn't an episode. I hope that clears it up. So when I last spoke to everybody, I talked about doing an offensive preview episode with the idea of getting that out before camp started. Obviously, that did not happen. So I don't really have a script or anything like I normally do. Usually, I have at least bullet points about what I want to talk about. So on this week's show, we're just going to kind of riff on a little bit of everything Dolphins related, and we'll just kind of go into it. I'll do my best to talk about the offense and, you know, what I think may happen with the depth chart there and some of the key position battles and stuff like that. We'll cover the Xavien Howard situation, and then we'll cover some of the notes from training camp so far this week. And I do want to make a special mention. This week's episode is sponsored by Manscaped. Do you like playing with balls? No, I'm not talking about footballs. I mean your balls. Our friends at Manscaped, the global leaders in below-the-waist grooming, want you to shave your pubes with the Tom Brady of ball trimmers, the brand new Lawnmower 4.0. Only the GOAT technology for the greatest balls of all time. When you're going towards the end zone, make sure you use the right tools for the job and choose Manscaped. 2 million men worldwide trust them, so join the movement with our exclusive offer by using code DOLPHINSTALK at manscaped.com for 20% off plus free shipping. The world is starting to open, and the Performance Package 4.0 from Manscaped is here to help you get ready. Inside, you'll find their brand new Lawnmower 4.0 trimmer, Weed Whacker ear and nose hair trimmer, Crop Preserver ball deodorant, Crop Reviver toner, plus two free gifts, performance boxer briefs, and the Shed Travel Bag. That's an incredible deal. And again, remember, get 20% off and free shipping with the code DolphinsTalk at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com when you used the promo code DolphinsTalk. Take your ball defense to the promised land with Manscaped. And thank you to them for being a continued supporter of the Dolphins Talk Weekly podcast. So, let's dive into the week that was the opening week of Dolphins training camp. Unfortunately, yours truly cannot be there this year. School and getting my MBA has got to take priority. But I do promise that at some point I will get down there and I will cover hopefully more than one practice, but I will get down there and cover one practice. I will be at the Dolphins versus Bengals preseason game. That is the third and final preseason game this season later in August. So I will do my best to give an absolutely in-depth write-up and review of that game and how the Dolphins look when they come here to Cincinnati. But let's start off with sort of the big news of this week, and that's been the Xavien Howard situation. I'm not going to beat a dead horse and cover the Instagram post. You can all go read that and make speculative tweets and posts as Dolphin fans are wont to do. You can do that on your own time. I'm not going to bring it back up. I thought it was kind of interesting today that Brian Flores sort of had a Freudian slip and mentioned that X was closing in on getting back from the ankle injury. And I do wonder if that was maybe him meaning the team is closing in on figuring out the situation and X comes back. Obviously, you guys know my thoughts on that. He makes the team better. He is the best player on the team. And, you know, you're probably looking at him as being one of the best players at his position. Miami, I think, has two of them in the NFL. Xavien Howard, I think, is the best corner, and obviously Jason Sanders, my boy, the best kicker in the league. He makes the defense a lot better. There's a lot more that you can do with him in the secondary than without him. And based on kind of what we've heard about the Dolphins these first few practices, it seems like they could be building something pretty special on offense. And it seems like Tua, like I've talked about all along, was going to take that jump from year one to year two. And just based on pretty much every review you get, you know, I haven't seen it with my own two eyes, but, you know, you'd think that a lot of these beat writers are pretty objective by now and they know good quarterback play after having sat through Ryan Tannehill for years, Chad Henning, Chad Pennington, you know, AJ Feely, Jay Fiedler, you guys name it. You know, something obviously is working right if they're reporting this many glowing things about Tua. Now, bringing this back to Xavien Howard, you know, this team, I think, has the chance to, I think they should make the playoffs. Let's start there. And I think they've got the chance to make some noise once they get into the playoffs. But you're going to need to have a top-notch defense to get through the AFC and some of the quarterbacks and different offenses you can likely face in the playoffs. And as we saw last year against Kansas City, having Xavien Howard on the field certainly helps your cause. So, you know, I always try and approach situations like this with patience. I know that's not how the Twitter environment works. Everybody's got to be knee-jerk. And there's a million people out there who said, you know, denigrating things about X this week that will turn right back around and welcome him back with open arms if they get the situation resolved. That's just how it works. I get it. You know, there's nothing you can do to change it. But I hope they are able to work something out because I truly believe that having him on the roster, on the field, makes the Dolphins that much better. He is that good. So, had a couple new additions come in with Cravon LeBlanc and Shaquem Griffin. Cravon LeBlanc, I know, was kind of a hot name among draftniks when he came out. I don't even remember what year that he was drafted. Shaquem Griffin, I know, a very fun story, very inspirational story. I just have a hard time seeing his fit with this roster. You know, if there's one thing his time in Seattle proved, It's that he is not an off-ball linebacker in the NFL. He's got to play on the edge to be, you know, anywhere near effective on defense. And there's just not that many guys that are 230-pound edge rushers. You know, we saw limited reps of him having some success doing it. I just think it's going to be hard for him to kind of carve out a roster spot when you already have Andrew Van Ginkle there. You have Jalen Phillips, who you just drafted. You have Emmanuel Ogba, who is coming off a career year. You have guys like Zach Sealer and Christian Wilkins, who are going to get reps at defensive end. Brian Flores basically gave that to the media himself on Saturday. You know, you still have a young guy in Jason Strobridge developing. And then you still have, you know, backup pieces, and you may not even be able to keep both of them. You have Brennan Scarlett. You have Vince Beagle. So he's really going to have to stand out on special teams to make it. And I think that's a little bit of an uphill climb, but I think everybody is rooting for him, you know, truly an inspirational story. With Craven LeBlanc, you know, I think he's a guy that's probably your bottom corner on this roster, if that. I think Miami's got a lot of depth, and even more so if Xavien Howard is on this roster week one. So nothing really too surprising there. You know, DJ Fluker on IR. I saw the blurb go by on the bottom line on NFL Network that it sounds like he'll reach an injury settlement, which to me kind of sounds like he's going to get released. And, you know, I guess let's just start there with the offensive line, and we'll kind of kick right into a Dolphins offensive preview episode like I talked about. So this Saturday practice, and I'm recording this very early Sunday morning, it sounds like the offensive line, you know, consisted of, from left to right, Austin Jackson, Liam Eichenberg, which is a bit of a surprise, Michael Dieter at center, Rob Hunt at right guard, and Jesse Davis at right tackle. And I would just caution you that if you follow NFL practices and know how NFL offensive line coaches work, the combinations early in camp are usually very fluid unless you're returning all five starters from a really good offensive line from the prior year. They want to figure out which combinations of guys work and where they can play in case you have injuries in the game. So, you know, I wouldn't read too much into Liam Eichenberg being at left guard. That may just be something they tried for a day. You know, you could very well see him back at right tackle this week as we get into practices. Now, as far as the line goes, I think you're going to end up seeing some sort of combination where you've got four guys pretty firmly entrenched in positions by the end of camp. And that would be Austin Jackson at left tackle, Solomon Kinley at left guard, Rob Hunt at right guard, and Liam Eichenberg at right tackle, you know, barring something unexpected. I think the center spot is probably the one that's going to be the most contested. And we found out, you know, through Barry Jackson that Michael Dieter has been, you know, the starter there most of the offseason in camp. But we haven't seen pads come on yet. And I think that's an area where Matt Skura might be able to catch, if not surpass, Michael Dieter in the battle for that spot. Maybe you see someone like a Jermaine Illuminor, you know, catch up to Solomon Kinley at guard, or perhaps he can play right tackle. I think he's going to end up being the swing guy that a lot of people kind of pegged DJ Fluker to be. And then I still think there's a very valuable role for Jesse Davis, just because he can play, well, he has played four different positions, left tackle, left guard, right guard, right tackle, in games in the NFL, and they've also cross-trained him at center. I think that's a very valuable thing. So I think by some way, shape, or form, you're going to see Davis, Illuminor, one of the two between Dieter and Skura, be depth. And I don't know if they keep eight or nine. I think the roster math, especially on offense, could be very challenging given the wide receiver and tight end positions this year. So, you know, those two battles, I think, are probably the toughest to decipher on paper. And at least in my mind, as I look at this roster without having been there at a practice or seen a preseason game as yet. So I guess if I had to make a prediction at this point, you know, I think Jackson, Kinley, I'll lean with Skura, the veteran, Hunt and Eichenberg end up the starting five with Davis, Illuminor, Dieter as the backups, and maybe you keep, you know, someone developmental like Larnell Coleman or Adam Pankey on the roster as a ninth. I think that's going to come down to how many receivers and tight ends you keep, though. And we'll save those positions for the end of the podcast because I think they're sort of the hardest to break down, at least for me personally. Quarterbacks, I think it's pretty obvious that, you know, you have two guys that are going to be on the roster. I think Tua is one. I know if you watched the coverage on Friday morning, William McGinnis spoke pretty glowingly of Jacoby Brissett. I do wonder how much of that is because of Brissett's time in New England and just some of the commonality he and William McGinnis have, probably knowing some of the same people and coaches, etc. I do think Jacoby Brissett is a pretty good backup option to have. I don't know that he's got the strongest arm in the world. I don't think he's stronger armed than Tua, based on the film that I've seen. But I think he's a guy that can come in. He won't turn the ball over. He'll play it safe. He'll play it conservatively. And he can help you win games as long as you have a good defense to go with it and a good running game to help him lean on, which I think is a little bit questionable for Miami at this point in time until we see more development in actual games. But I think Brissett's there, and I think obviously they must see something in Reed Sinnett to keep him around, and I wonder if you can keep him on the practice squad another year, and then maybe in 2022 you look at him more as the backup quarterback option. But I think it's going to be those two guys, Tua, obviously, and Brissett, and I think really this offense is going to go as Tua goes. And if you go back to the Catching Buffalo series, I think it was the second episode I did of that three-week mini-series that talked about the jump that Bills quarterback Josh Allen made from year one to year two, and then from year two to year three, he just really took off. I think that if we see Tua have that year one to year two jump, this team is a dangerous team to have to face in the playoffs. I would not want to have to face Miami, provided they stay healthy and all of that. You know, Tua, obviously, if you've heard some of the interviews with, you know, some of the beat writers have interviewed his trainer, Reason, who writes here for Dolphins Talk and does the Finish Line podcast with Richmond Webb in Ballgame, talked to Tua's trainer. You know, obviously, you can listen to those interviews. You can hear what Tua's done, how he's grown, how much stronger he is. Those are all good signs. And just from me kind of following along with Dolphins Twitter and knowing some of the people who are down there at camp, at practices live, you know, it seems like there's a pretty noticeable jump that has already kind of taken place. And, you know, the words that kind of described Friday and Saturday's practices this week, you know, I don't take them lightly, but it sounds like all things went pretty darn well for Mr. Tagovailoa. And I think what's even more impressive to me is he's done this without Will Fuller, who's got some sort of issue that kept him out. He practiced day one and hasn't since. And then Devontae Parker and Preston Williams are both on the PUP. They haven't practiced at all. I do apologize. We do have two cats that live in the basement. And quick side note, when I first started dating my wife, she hid this fact from me for almost three full months. And, you know, I'm a little bit allergic to cats and pet dander and stuff like that. So we were dating and she was working third shift at the hospital. So one day I'm at work, it's about 2 o'clock, which is usually when she was up and, you know, doing her daily routine before she would have to leave at around 6 to go into work. And, you know, I get this text message and you know how you can see the dot, dot, dot going when someone is, you know, typing a long message. I turn to the woman who sat at the desk next to me who I, you know, she was in everybody's, you know, dating and personal life business. She loved it. So I would always kind of keep her aware. And I told her, you know, I've done it now. I think she's going to break up with me. You know, I got this big, long text message about, you know, Kevin, I have a confession to make. And, you know, I read on and on and on. And in the end, it was really just oh yeah, I have two cats. They lived in the basement the entire time we've been dating. So if you heard them, that was them. The two cats are both still here. Almost 6 years later now. Our first date was at the end of August in 2015. So kudos to you cats for staying in the basement for however long you've really been down here. I've known it's at least 6 years, but small side story I thought was appropriate since they are apparently nocturnal and are running all over the place as I record this podcast. Back to Tua Tagovailoa. You know, again, I think it's really cool that he's been able to do this without Devontae, without Preston Williams. Mike Gesicki missed practice on Saturday. You know, but I think that speaks to a lot of the talent that Miami has, and I think the improvement in the grasp of the offense that Tua is going to have this year. You know, I don't necessarily think it's too huge a deal to have co-offensive coordinators. You know, I don't think they had the co-offensive coordinator title, but Willie McGinnis talked about how in New England, I can't remember if it was when he was there or shortly after he had retired, but the Patriots, while they still had Tom Brady, had both Josh McDaniels and Brian Daboll, who is now the OC with the Bills, in New England kind of putting together the offense, and they were responsible for different things. And as you know, Chad O'Shea, before Miami hired him in 2019, he had sort of been the red zone coordinator for New England. So I think Brian Flores kind of follows that Bill Belichick model of letting guys coach to their strengths and do what they do well and kind of having that collaborative effort. And he spoke about that when he was on NFL Network Friday morning. So I'm not too worried about it. And he's reiterated several times that there's only going to be one voice in Tua's helmet. I think that's the way the NFL communication rules work anyway. So, you know, I'm not worried about the game day process. And I think having more minds collaborating kind of helps you plan better. So I'm open to this idea and seeing how it'll go. And clearly there's been some big plays in the passing game. And, you know, I know this isn't 100% real football and guys aren't in pads. And obviously Xavier Howard hasn't been out there for every, you know, 7-on-7 and 11-on-11 team period and things like that. But I think it's a great sign that you're seeing guys like Waddle and Wilson and Adam Shaheen making big plays from Tua. So, again, I think this offense goes as far as Tua goes. I think he's going to take a pretty nice jump from year one to year two. I don't necessarily think he's going to be a complete player, complete NFL quarterback by the end of this season, but I think he'll be pretty close to it. You know, he seems to certainly have the drive and the want to be that guy. And, you know, it's been a long time since Dan Marino took a snap from under center in the aqua and orange. Hopefully, Tua can prove to finally be the long-term answer at that position. And he'll be joined in the backfield by running backs like Miles Gaskin and Malcolm Brown. And I saw a couple tweets from people who were there saying that Malcolm Brown was used nicely by Tua as a check down option on several occasions. And that was one of the things I talked about when I did my free agent review, was that, you know, Malcolm Brown doesn't really seem like your typical third down back. You know, he's not speedy and shifty like someone like Alvin Kamara, who does a lot in the passing game. But Malcolm Brown does a lot in the passing game. Good blocker, you know, pretty good athletic catcher, despite being 5'11", 225. And he can do some things after the catch. And Jared Goff used that to great effect when they were in Los Angeles together. So, you know, good for Malcolm Brown for doing that. I think he can give you kind of the hammer back, you know, when it comes to goal line and short yardage situations, as well as some of the pass blocking and receiving out of the backfield. And I think one of the themes that I've kind of noticed looking through some of these positions is Miami's kind of built in redundancies. You know, if you look at it, Malcolm Brown and Jared Doakes are pretty closely the same type of player. So I think you've got two options there. You know, clearly Miles Gaskin was a breakout player last year. I've heard from several people that he looks even more explosive this year. So that's a good sign. And he and Savon Ahmed not entirely the same. You know, Gaskin's more of the got good vision. He can find creases. He's able to take plays and wind them all the way to the backside, even when the plays aren't designed to go that way. He finds space and runs to daylight. Not always a big, huge, flashy play, but he gets positive yardage quite a bit. And then you have someone like Savon Ahmed, who, not an extreme home run hitter like a Chris Johnson or CJ Spiller back in the day, but has a pretty good amount of speed and can turn, you know, a short run into a 20, 30 yard gain in a hurry. Both smaller, shifty guys that you can kind of hide behind that big offensive line and use. I really think those are the four guys that end up making the roster. You know, Patrick Laird's been a great special teamer and third down back when he's been called upon. But I think we're at the point now where Miami, you know, is probably able to graduate from, you know, someone like a Patrick Laird. We talked about it on defense. They're probably able to graduate from having to use guys like Sam McGuavin and Calvin Munson on a regular basis. You know, if you look at the nose tackle spot, for instance, does someone like a Benito Jones make it this year when you've got a developing Raekwon Davis and they clearly targeted bringing back John Jenkins? So, you know, some of these younger guys that have had bit roles, I think Miami may be ready to kind of move on to or put them on the practice squad, because we found out we will have the 16-man practice squads again this year. So maybe you keep some of those guys in, we'll call it, close orbit to the roster. You know, don't let them go too far because we may need you at some point down the line type of thing. One other thing I would note about the running backs is it seems like Miami's made sort of a new effort this year to try and find a fullback or at least an H-back type of person who can come in and block from the backfield. You know, Chandler Cox had some nice plays. He had some bad plays. Was never consistently active last year. And I think that, you know, probably hurts his chances of ever sticking in that role. And, you know, they released him because of that. But, you know, you go out and you bring in a Carl Tucker as an undrafted free agent. You add Seathan Carter from the Bengals, who's been more H-back and special teams than tight end since he's entered the league. You know, the tight end from Oklahoma, whose name I can't remember right off the bat, that they just signed this week, something Meyer. You know, more of a blocking type guy. Durham Smythe has been a blocking type guy. It clearly seems like they want to have someone in that kind of role, or at least have that type of capability on the team to help out in the running game. I don't really know at this point if I have a strong opinion on who that guy might be. You know, I want to say Carl Tucker might be that guy, but they may end up valuing Seathan Carter's special teams experience a little bit more. So that's one of the, you know, kind of smaller position battles I'll be watching in camp. So we've talked about the line, we've talked about the quarterbacks, so, and then the four running backs. That gives me 14 guys on the roster on offense so far. So again, to refresh you, at quarterback, I've got Tua and Jacoby Brissett. Running backs, Miles Gaskin, Malcolm Brown, Savon Ahmed, and Jared Doakes. And then on the offensive line, I had Austin Jackson, Solomon Kinley, Matt Skura, Rob Hunt, Liam Eikenberg, Jesse Davis, Jermaine Illuminor, and Michael Dieter. So 14 guys. I think, if I remember right, without pulling up my notes, I had 25 guys on defense in my episode 2 weeks ago. And then the three specialists, Jason Sanders, Mr. Automatic, Blake Ferguson, Mr. Consistent, and then Michael Pilardi, who apparently is Mr. Versatility. I think those guys are locks. So with that said, we have 14 guys on our offensive roster. That gives us 11 spots to kind of play around with. So let's tackle the tight end position right now. I think it's a pretty safe bet to assume that Mike Gesicki is going to be on the team. He's basically a tall seam and slot receiver who you can play in a one-on-one situation on the backside of a 3-by-1 if you want to. You know, he's a good red zone weapon. He clearly showed he has a tremendous catch radius last year. I think he's safe. I think Hunter Long is safe. That's two guys. Based on what Adam Shaheen did and getting an extension last year during the season, I think he's probably pretty safe. So that's three. At times last year, Miami had four tight ends activated. They were Mike Gesicki, Adam Shaheen, Durham Smythe, and then they called up Chris Myrick several times from the practice squad. I think to me that the fourth spot really comes down to a battle between, you know, Durham Smythe and Seathan Carter. Both of them are very good special teams players. You probably don't realize it, but Durham Smythe, I think, has the most tackles over the past 2 years combined of any Dolphin on special teams on the roster. He was very good behind Walt Akins, and he was very good again last year. So do you value him and his blocking? And I think he had 26 catches a year ago, you know, starting to show some more as a receiver. Do you value that versus someone like Seathan Carter, who is maybe more H-back, can line up in the backfield, and still kind of gives you the same stuff on special teams? I think that'll be an interesting battle to watch. I kind of feel like in my gut they gave Seathan Carter a 3-year contract for a reason. And I think maybe I would lean towards him making it over Durham Smythe at this point just because of that. So that would give me four tight ends: Gesicki, Shaheen, Hunter Long, and Seathan Carter. So that puts us up to 18 guys on the offensive roster with seven spots left. The wide receiver position, this is by far and away the deepest the position has ever been under the Miami Dolphins. You have a whole slew of guys who have played at the NFL level. Will Fuller, Devontae Parker, Preston Williams, Jakeem Grant, Robert Foster, Lynn Bowden, Malcolm Perry was a rookie last year. You just drafted Jalen Waddle. You had Kirk Merritt, you know, active, although I think he only played two snaps. You've got a whole bunch of NFL talent at this wide receiver position. I forgot about Mac Hollins as well. So I think it's obvious that Waddle and Fuller are safe. Those are two of the guys that I think are going to make it. I'm personally a pretty big fan of Devontae Parker, and you know, if we can ever figure out the code to get planetary alignment or figure out what kind of, you know, being we have to sacrifice, you know, like Serrano in the movie Major League, to get him to stay healthy a full year, I think he can be a potent part of this offense. And I'm going to put him on there because he's got a team-friendly contract at the moment. So Waddle, Fuller, Parker make it for me. We continue to hear great things about Albert Wilson. It sounds like he is, you know, close to or at the same level of athleticism he was at when we last saw him in 2019. And maybe he's back to those 2018 levels before the hip injury. He was pretty good that year for Miami while we had him. That's a nice development. You know, Lynn Bowden, obviously, they traded for last year, so they have some value there. So I think both of those guys make it. So right now, we're at Waddle, Fuller, Parker, Wilson, and Bowden. That gives me five. Robert Foster, I don't think, you know, he's not going away, and he's got some tremendous special teams value. I highlighted that in my offensive free agent review when he was with Buffalo and with Washington. You can use him as a gunner. You can use him as one of the coverage men on kickoffs. You can use him as a jammer on punt return. He's got a lot of uses. He's got some speed. He's got some size to him. And I think maybe Miami's at the point now where, you know, is Preston Williams ever going to be healthy enough to be consistent? You know, does Robert Foster maybe help you step into that role a little bit? He seems to have had a pretty good offseason to this point and a good camp to this point. So I'm going to go ahead and predict that he makes the roster over Preston Williams. I don't know if they'll cut him or trade him or what, but I feel pretty comfortable there. So now we've got six: Waddle, Fuller, Parker, Wilson, Bowden, Foster. That gives us one open spot left on our 53-man roster, and you can look at it in several different directions. Do you want to keep a fifth running back like Patrick Laird, who's pretty valuable on special teams? Do you maybe keep both Seathan Carter and Durham Smythe? Do you keep Seathan Carter and a true fullback like Carl Tucker, who's training on at that position? Do you keep a seventh player who's got a tremendous special teams ability, like Jakeem Grant as a returner, or Matt Collins, who seemingly does everything well on special teams? Do you keep a ninth lineman, you know, or do you keep an extra player on defense, you know, maybe an extra defensive back? I would lean towards no there, especially if you get Xavien Howard to come back in the fold, because I think you've got pretty darn good depth really across the board on defense. So I think it's got to be an offensive player at this point. And I'm tempted to keep an extra lineman, you know, but you're really not going to get use out of a ninth lineman. So as much as Dolphins fans hate on the guy, I think there's still a useful purpose to have Jakeem Grant on the team as a kick and punt returner, especially as a punt returner. You know, I know people want to say, well, Jalen Waddle can do that. You know, that's fine. I would say maybe look at Tyreek Hill in Kansas City. They only have him do that in certain circumstances. Or it's sort of like what Miami did with Jarvis Landry when he was still here, when Jakeem was a rookie. You know, they wanted more security. They would have Jarvis Landry in his sure hands, his triple XL gloves, come in and fielded a punt in a critical field position situation. Otherwise, they would let Jakeem do it because he was, you know, he has that ability to break it. So I think for my seventh receiver spot, I'll give it to Jakeem Grant. And I don't even need him to play offense. I would just keep him strictly as a returner. And maybe you look to try and restructure that deal if possible. So, you know, that's my offensive roster. We already went over the defense a couple weeks ago. I would encourage you to go back and listen to that episode. I think a lot of the predictions I had talked about, based on some things I've heard, are pretty accurate. You know, Sealer and Wilkins playing defensive end, at least some. Jalen Phillips being sort of a true edge guy, maybe playing some stand-up outside linebacker as well. Bernardrick McKinney being able to play both inside and outside. A lot of three safety looks with Eric Rowe and Brandon Jones both on the field at the same time. So, you know, I think this defense is pretty well solidified. It's just a matter of, you know, ingratiating a couple new pieces. Obviously, Jerome Baker got a nice new contract, so it's good to see him stick around. You know, I hope at least at some point people will people will understand how much value he has to the team and not just look at him, you know, getting stuck on blocks. Yes, he does need to be more consistent at shedding blocks, but he's such a tremendous blitzer. He does a lot of things in coverage that are very subtle that people don't notice. Again, I always say it, go back and watch the San Francisco game last year. He's very valuable. I know people show that Fred Warner clip, who got the huge extension. Jerome Baker did more complicated coverage assignments in that San Francisco game than Fred Warner ever dreamed of. He just has. Go back and watch it. So, you know, I feel like Miami's got a pretty nice core together. I feel like if the offense, really the offensive line in Tua, I guess if the offensive line comes together and Tua takes that Josh Allen type jump from year one to year two, this team is going to be very, very competitive. I think they would have a good chance at keeping pace with Buffalo in the division. And even if they don't make it to, you know, as a division winner, I think they've got a very good chance to be a wild card this year. And if they get into the dance, I think they can make some noise. You know, ideally, you'd want to see them be able to get home field advantage because, you know, of the last few years, all the playoff teams in the AFC, barring Houston, who plays inside, and Indy, who plays inside, are all cold weather cities in the winter. Kansas City, Pittsburgh, Baltimore, New England, Cleveland, all cold weather cities. So just something to watch out for. But it's been a fun episode this week. Again, just some administrative things. There's a weird quirk in our schedule next week for school. I will not have an episode next weekend. I will pick it back up the weekend that Miami plays the Chicago Bears in the preseason opener. And I will be in person at the Dolphins versus Bengals game here in Cincinnati. I will do my best to give the most detailed, in-depth write-up and review of that game I can. As I mentioned before, because of the MBA class I'm in and the whole program, which hopefully will take less than 2 years for me to finish, articles are going to be a little bit more, infrequent over the coming months. I still am going to keep my spot in the Pro Football Writers of America and will renew my dues there and do my best to keep writing. But just have patience. This is something I've wanted to do for a long time to help provide better for my family. And I think, once we get into the swing of it, the schedule will become easier. I'll have a better handle on it and I'll be able to put out more content. Until then, enjoy week 2 of Dolphins training camp and fins up. Please follow me on Twitter at KevinMD4. Follow the show on Spotify, iTunes, Spreaker, or wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you guys for listening. Hit me up anytime if you have questions. And let's go Dolphins.